Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You are listening to Lorehammer, episode 14, Cicatrix Maledictum, The Great Rift.
Hello and welcome back to Lorehammer. My name is Eric.
Hey there.
That was Mark, I guess.
What's up, folks?
And then joining us today, one more time.
I got an intro, but Jordan didn't. You told them. Yeah. This was Mark, but then Jordan.
Your voice is not nearly as recognizable as Jordan's sweet, sultry tones.
Yeah, but he rarely talks, so it's like, you know, I'm always rambling.
That's why it's a gift every time he does.
Oh, okay.
For the people.
I grace their ears.
The peasants out there.
Oh, okay. I see how it is.
Joining us for the last time is Christian.
And this time for real. Last time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he begged and whined. It was crying and
he gave me $50 even, so that was nice.
Wait, I didn't get any money.
I was supposed to share it with you, and it was actually only $5.
I drew a zero on the next to the five.
Tricked him. But today is it's the culmination kind of everything we've been working towards for the past several months. Really, this is kind of the home stretch for us.
That doesn't mean that we're done or anything.
It doesn't?
No, you made it sound like we're done after this episode.
I thought this is all my contract was for this one.
Hey, Eric, I got $50 for you.
It's a Chuck E. Cheese coupon.
It'll last until the sexual harassment complaints start rolling. Then we're done.
I've already filed a bunch against Eric, though. And
I'm also the HR department. So. That's why. I have a special filing cabinet for everything from Mark. It's called the garbage can. But this is our State of the Galaxy episode. It's where we're going to discuss where everything has led up to this point, kind of current lore with GW and what they're pressing forwards. They're releasing a lot of new content, obviously, with 8th coming out. And since so much is changing, we are kind of having our fingers in everything in this episode.
Yeah.
Every single race we're going to try and touch on as much as our knowledge allows.
Or as much as is needed. Some things happen to some races, but it's like not even relevant.
Wow. Like what? Who isn't relevant? How do you get to decide?
So remember I think it was our third episode, our orc episode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this is the orcs and they were the same back then and they're the same today. So basically they're still the same.
No, they've changed. No, there's some serious
character
updates.
Development.
Yeah, they've
discovered a new color.
What does it do?
Gold, and you know what it's good for?
What is it good for?
I don't know. I can't think.
I was trying to think of something too, but all I could think of was goes fast. That's already there.
But yeah, so like. There's no need to talk about orcs.
Good
you
call.
Know?
Orcs are just orcs.
They're just orcs.
Freaking Daka
Daka. And we love them that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If they ever changed, that would be the issue.
That would be bad.
Yeah. our last episode was Tyranids.
Yeah.
And I have on my notes here that there aren't any updates, but I'm going to need you to quiet for 1 second, Mark. And I'm going to need an apology in a second.
Another apology for me?
Yes. Prefer, like, if you want to write it out, we can wait till the next episode. But when we were talking about the different High Fleets, you specified that High Fleet Hydra was not a High Fleet, and it was a Splinter Fleet.
Oh, shit.
There are actually, like, 5 new High Fleets that have been, like, set apart. I just read the Tyranid Codex as well as reading, like, the main rule book. I just want you to know that, fuck you, there's a lot more out there.
Okay, so let me rephrase it. There's 3 major High Fleets, then there's a bunch of minor, and then there's Splinter Fleets on top
Games
of all
Workshop
the-
does not denote the difference.
No, I'm serious.
Between major and minor.
No, I'm serious. Major are Behemoth, Kraken, and Leviathan.
Like,
those are major High Fleets.
Like, I agree.
There's also minors, and then there's also Splinters.
I agree, on the map, they are very large. And they're the first ones in. But Games Workshop doesn't say there's major
I am
and
writing
minor.
No apology. Yeah, no, they do. Seriously.
Well, you can show me that later.
Okay.
Okay. So I know that we've been talking past a couple episodes about how we're looking at adding new segments or changing things. And this week we're going to do one called Gets Hot. You can see a theme in the titles of our segments.
What theme?
Rapid Fire.
Okay.
Gets Hot.
I don't get it.
Are all weapon things?
No, like 8th edition.
But
there is no gets hot in 8th edition.
Really? Plasma weapons don't get hot?
Lots don't anymore, no. Some do.
So it's still there?
Sure. They don't call it gets hot, though.
What do they call it?
I don't know. Rules.
Explosion. Plasma explosion.
Maybe they do. I don't know. I'm just being a dick.
A
dickhead.
We're going to do gets hot. And gets hot is I'm going to ask someone what gets them hot about Warhammer. What makes them start taking their clothes off and want to, you know, titillate themselves with bits. So, Christian.
This is how we get a Harvey Weinstein situation, okay?
And I've just opened Jordan's file with HR. Great. It's right next to this clearly non-garbage can. Christian, what gets you hot about Warhammer 40K?
So just to clarify, this is gets hot in a good way?
Or bad. It could be
either. Can it make me angry?
I don't know. Sometimes.
I have a propensity to get
angry. Sometimes you fire your plasma gun, it gets hot.
And it blows up in your face.
Sometimes it gets hot and it explodes all over their face.
Exactly. So it could be either way.
Tell me about a time it exploded in their face.
In their face.
Wait, is that a good or a bad thing?
That's a good thing for you.
I like exploding in my face, though.
Christian.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Something that gets Christian hot.
Space Marines. Everything about Space Marines.
What about the fact that Space Marines have no penis?
Troll.
That's even better.
It's a fucking troll.
Everything about Space Marines, hey? What's your favorite thing about Space Marines? What sets them apart the most?
Like, if you compare them to any other galaxies, like, super soldiers. I've always been into, like, super soldiers. So, like, any...
It's because he himself could never be a good soldier.
You always try to be role play something that you're not.
Emulate something better. Yeah.
Sure.
So they're like just the pinnacle. Like if you compare a Space Marine to any other super soldier from almost any other source of fiction, they just get stomped by Space Marines. I can't think of any like.
Of course you can.
Traditional military, or like science fiction military.
Stormtroopers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not even super soldiers.
Jedi.
Though, so.
No. I mean, you have librarians.
So. Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
He caught me there.
Exactly. So, yeah, Space Marines are the first thing that got me into the lore.
Superman.
And there'll always be.
What about?
He's not a super soldier.
What about an army of Kryptonians who all grew up on Earth?
Okay. Maybe.
Maybe.
They would just make bolt guns with kryptonite shells in them and just annihilate them.
Hmm. Yep.
Yep, Mark. You want to continue this conversation?
No, because kryptonite is super common, apparently, because anytime Superman shows up, his only weakness is...
There always happens to be kryptonite nearby.
It's called a coincidence.
Well, you just load those coincidences into a bolt gun and fire them at the enemy.
Yeah, Space Marines are a pretty good reason to get hot, though.
Yeah. Everything about them, I just love them.
Yeah. If you could...
Marry one?
Yeah. Like, since you love them so much.
Bang, fuck, kill, Space Marine.
Who was it?
Abaddon, Dante, and...
Kaldor.
Of course, yeah.
Mary Kaldor, yeah.
Mary Kaldor.
Because he's always gone and you don't have to deal
with
him?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
That's the best kind of spouse.
Yeah.
So that's the one guy that's not married.
I agree.
Kill? Who'd you kill?
Abaddon.
And you'd sleep with Dante.
Oh, yeah. He's got all the experience in the galaxy.
1,600 right. years of sexual experience.
Technically, Abaddon would be older. And he's probably seen way more.
During his time gaining Slaanesh's favor.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, interesting. Right. So that's a great segment there of talking about
speaking
what gets
us off. Speaking of Abaddon. Let's get right into our main topic for today. Which is... Oh, actually, no. It is our main topic, but our first section is previously on 40K. You guys... obviously, like, it's an allusion to Supernatural, right? You know Supernatural. You know in, like, a preview.
Never watched it. I don't know anything.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, lots of shows are like
that. Is that the show with the two gay guys? Even.
They're brothers, okay?
They're always doing things, and they're always cutting each other and spreading AIDS and stuff.
Okay, A, they're brothers, and B, they, like, save the world, like,
they're brother
times.
Lovers is what...
Brother lovers.
Wow.
Mother boy.
Previously on 40K, we are going to briefly touch the 13th Black Crusade. So the 13th is, I know when we covered Chaos Marines, we talked about 1 to 12. Not really, but we kind of did. But not
we mentioned
really.
There was 12.
Yeah, we were like, there's 12. They go 1 through 12, and that's about it.
Let me sum it up for you. So they attack Cadia.
12 times.
And then they attack Cadia again.
Yeah.
So on and so forth.
What happens the next one? Yeah. So on the 13th Crusade, Mark, why don't you tell us what they do?
They attack Cadia.
No way. Yeah.
But this time for real. The other times they were just joking.
They were just playtesting. Well, Abaddon does attack Cadia, but he also attacks a bunch of other planets within like the Cadian system as well.
And almost even, I'm not going to say galaxy-wide, but like...
It is a very large
around crusade. The Eye of Terra. Or terror birds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the reason is because there's a lot of pylons on these, like, alien structures, right? But they're Necron pylons, right?
Correct. Yeah. It's pretty well implied that they're Necron pylons.
Yeah. I don't know if they've ever come out and say it, but they definitely, like, they're alien structures
there's enough evidence.
That they glow green.
Yeah.
And they've been there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and they're found on all these planets surrounding the eye.
Right, yeah.
I think they're even, like, galaxy-wide.
No, they are.
They are. But, like, you find them everywhere, but more specifically around the Eye of Terror.
Which is odd, because they are way before the Eye of Terror.
Well, that's why I stated galaxy-wide. It just happens that, like...
They were there, yeah. I brought this up with Mark a while back on, like, the timeline. It's like, why would they build it before there was a problem preemptively?
Yeah, well, the thing is,
but
like...
But it's not. It's just they built them galaxy-wide.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Well, the whole
as
purpose
a measure,
of them was to cut off the regular world from the warp itself.
It's essentially like my blank theory, where you put one blank every...
I hate you so much.
It's like that, just with pylons, where they just pylon the entire galaxy. And the purpose of these pylons was to stop the warp from bleeding into reality.
Never worked. They couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
But it would have been like the ultimate blow against the Eldar. And this is back in the War on Heaven. I don't know if we said that. It's Necron stuff, right? So
like
millions and millions of years ago.
Yeah.
But he attacks Cadia, and the planet gets destroyed by when these pylons overload. And you said it's Trazin who does that?
I think he has something to do with it. I'm pretty sure he does overload it, or lets the Imperium know how to overload it.
Oh, so now Necrons are working with humans.
Well, they've worked with Blood Angels.
Freaking great.
It's a really deep, complex storytelling fabric that's interesting with all the races.
I think everyone's just turning into friends now. That's what's going on.
Friend Hammer.
Friend Hammer. there's obviously a lot more stuff that happens during the 13th Black Crusade, but essentially Cadia gets destroyed, and Abaddon actually ends up destroying a bunch of these pylons around the Eye of Terror and on Cadia itself. And what happens when he does this is the Eye of Terror starts to expand out into the galaxy.
Yeah, and so it creates this rift, and really it's like there was like an area of the galaxy that was like covered in like warp, like an overlap. Now there's like a massive portion of the galaxy.
Yeah.
And it kind of like separates the galaxy in half. It like stretches from one corner.
Yeah, it stretches like from the galactic northwest to the galactic southeast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's called the Cicatrix Maledictum.
The Great Rift, the Crimson Path.
Gork's Grin.
Gork's Grin. Or is it Mork's Grin?
No, it's Gork. I'll fight you over this.
But yeah, like it just rips the galaxy in half, which is pretty crazy, really.
Do you know how often we say like, that's pretty sweet.
Pretty fucking.
That's pretty awesome.
Pretty sweet. I would love to see that happen.
But that is like currently where we stand in the galaxy is there's like a rent, a hole that is super brutal to try and pass through.
Yeah.
But it's
like, if I was to take away anything from 8th edition, it's that. Like, that's the big thing in my mind, because it affects every race. And it literally changes the galaxy, the fabric of the universe, or the fabric of the galaxy. Like, yeah, sure, there's Primarchs coming back, and that's great, but they're only on one planet at a time. And we'll get into them. We'll talk a bit about, like, their role in all this. But it's really the Great Rift that rips the galaxy in half.
Yeah. And this is where, like, the plot is being driven because of this Great Rift. Like,
yeah,
all these races are making, like, changes and terms of like their goals or what they're doing or allies or who their enemies are, because the galaxy now has changed. Whereas before, you kind of had the stalemate version of all of these galaxies are just vying for their own personal reasons. But now, as it stands, everything has changed. So their game is changing as well.
Yeah.
All right. So that's our setting.
Yeah.
So let's talk about a couple of the races within. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm getting over a sickness and it's no good.
Yeah, I was worried about you.
Yeah.
Deeply worried.
Okay. I'm just going to do a quick touch on the arm right there.
And there's another sexual harassment.
There's another garbage wad for the garbage can.
I'll fill that up eventually and you'll have to read it.
Mark, you can't write.
Caught
they're just,
me.
They're just pictures.
It's, where did Charlie, you touch you? Where did I touch you?
Yeah, that's a penis.
Okay, let's start with the Imperium as the Imperium stands. And the first thing I have written here is the rise of a Primarch.
Yeah, so during the whole 13 Black Crusades, events happen where...
You're really glossing over the details.
I know.
Which, I get it, I know. We don't have to say it again.
Yeah.
We'll come back to this later.
Yeah, like
I'm
not going to say that we're going to come back to this and talk about it in depth, but...
I'm sure we will eventually, but right now we don't have to.
Yeah. The like
events transpire where like the Eldar.
Yeah. And we'll talk. Let's talk about this more in the Eldar. But sure. Gilliman is resurrected.
He
comes back.
Due to sorceress magic.
Yeah,
from the Eldar.
Seriously.
And science. Sorcery and science.
Ah.
You can't. No.
Where sorcery ends, science begins. No. Where science ends, sorcery begins.
No, wait, it's no, all no. Science.
Is sorcery.
And sorcery. It's.
They're the same thing, Eric.
No, they're not.
They're exactly the same thing.
Where does feelings come into this?
They get smushed at the bottom. Your feelings don't matter. Oh, but yeah, Reboot is resurrected through fel magics and science. Yeah.
And in case you didn't know, Reboot Gilliman is the Primarch of the Ultramarines.
Ah!
So the most powerful legion or chapter. You give me that look, but it's like
they were the poster boys of the Imperium.
And like they have so many successor chapters.
Yeah, they outnumber, like just on numbers alone, if all things are equual, like they would win just on
actually,
numbers.
The Black Templar would have way more numbers than the
Not if you include all the Ultramarine.
Oh, I thought you were just doing chapter to chapter.
No,
successors too.
Like, yeah, because like all these successors do have great ties to the Ultramarines.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of other
because,
chapters.
Just because of like the Ultramar system.
And like for the record, we're not like Ultramarines fanboys. It's just a matter
it's
of
a
fact.
Reality.
Yeah, exactly. Just
yeah, regardless of whether like you hate them or not, like they follow the Codex the most.
Lies, actually.
Who follows it better?
Imperial Fistwood. You want to know why?
Why?
You ever heard of Tyrannic War Veterans of the Ultramarines, which are not a codex organization?
No.
Zing!
I want nothing to do with them.
Yeah. There's a fun fact for you.
Tyrannic War Veterans. From Tyrion?
No, from Battle of McCraig.
We'll get into those in episode 29.
Write that down, somebody.
Okay, interesting.
But yeah, but you are right. They are branded as like the Codex chapter. But anywho.
Yeah.
So Reboot Gilliman is their leader. He's one of the Emperor's quote-unquote sons or what do you call it? Bunny ears? I don't know. What are the things?
Yeah, air quotes.
Air quotes, yeah.
Bunny ears.
I don't know. They go flop and then they flop around. I don't know.
They emphasize the point.
And yeah, so he ends up taking charge of the Imperium.
And he's super pissed.
Yeah. Do you got that quote, Christian? No, you're busy texting?
Who is texting you?
Everyone I know is here.
I am. God, I hate this Eric guy. He's always sexually harassing me. But the Emperor, I mean, sorry, Reboot Gilliman goes and he makes like a pilgrimage to Terra to visit the Emperor.
You know what I know is funny?
What?
Like a pilgrimage was used, like back in the day, it would be like, oh, you like humble yourself and like you walk, right? And you journey. Like he's not walking.
It's funny that you say though that he does, like he humbles himself and it's like this, like, arduous task.
Yeah.
And it is for him to go there.
Why?
Like, so each of the Chaos Gods, when he gets resurrected.
Oh, is this when Nurgle is going nuts on his home planet?
Yeah. Oh, like, there's a bunch of, like, minor things in the background where, like, Nurgle is, like, infecting citizens and.
Minor things, he says.
Sure.
Yeah, Mortarion is.
In the grand scheme of things, they're minor. But, like, Mortarion, or not Mortarion, but, like, Nurgle is like, infecting people, and whenever Reboot Gilliman gets close to him, they get cured.
Oh, that
and
then is, when he that leaves, is one of Mortarion's.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Mortarion is unleashing the plague on the system.
Okay.
And then, because he wants Reboot to challenge him.
Okay.
Right, and then...
I thought that was later, but okay.
Reboot is refusing to come back because he's like... Because before, he like got trapped in his own sector, like worrying about his own things without worrying about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And now he's like, no, I'm not going to make that same mistake twice.
But yeah, so he is
tempted. So it is tough for him.
And he's,
all right.
He's tempted by Slaanesh. And just to even get to Terra, it's not like just one quick warp jump. Like he takes this huge fleet and like throughout the process, they keep like getting ambushed by people and like the fleet slowly dwindling. At one point, they get captured by one of the Traitor Legions. I'm trying to think.
Chaos.
One of the Traitor Legions trap him, and like they have to do this whole jailbreak, so they lose even more members, and like it's this whole big thing that happens. Right. So like it's not like he just does one warp dump; like it's a whole big thing that he has to do.
It's like a quest.
He even fights a couple of his brothers. Like he fights Magnus on this journey, and it's pretty wild.
Okay, so he makes it to Terra,
And they do the classic Games Workshop thing where they enter the throne room and the doors close and he comes back out a day later type thing. And and then he knows what he has to do. So he kind of like reorganizes the Imperium a little bit. Like he kicks out some High Lords, reestablishes others, tries to get things working in motion. And then he calls upon like his great crusade, a new great crusade, essentially. What do they call it?
The Indomitus. Yeah. Indomitus Crusade.
Yeah. And in order to help him on the Indomitus Crusade, we'll jump back in time a little bit and introduce a character called Call.
Belisarius
Call, the Archmagos, I believe. Is he an Archmagos?
I don't know what his official title is, but he's pretty high up within the ranks of the Mechanicum. Yeah.
And he's the worst.
We'll get into opinions later.
I know. Okay, fine. I just have to say
he creates an even better soldier than a space marine.
Heresy.
Well, except he does.
Oh, okay. Well, I take the heresy back then. Wait, does Reboot Gilliman approve?
Yes.
Okay.
You might argue that he asked him to do it.
Yeah, so during the Fall Acadia, the 13th Black Crusade, Call actually discovers that that Abaddon is destroying these pylons, and he figures out what the pylons are actually for, and he tries to like stop it. I think he and Trazan are the ones who like overload the pylons to like they think it's going to stop the warp, and it does for a second, but then it gets overloaded. And
yeah, like shoots a beam into the Eye of Terra, and it begins to recede and shrink, and like all warp influence like ceases on Cadia, but then it backfires and explodes, and then it just expands and then tears across the galaxy.
So then he gets in contact with the Eldar, and we'll get into them again, and he goes on a pilgrimage to resurrect Reboot Gilliman.
Everyone's going on pilgrimages,
but he did it first. He did it before Reboot Gilliman did. So he has a crazy part to play in resurrecting Reboot Gilliman. He goes there, he makes him a suit of armor, and he hands him life.
He's like the science component behind the resurrection.
Yeah.
And apparently he was tasked with making the suit of armor before.
Yeah.
Like way in the past. We're talking like thousands of years before Gulliman even was put into stasis.
Weird.
Yeah, which is, yeah, I'll give my opinions later, but
yeah, I know.
Gulliman instructs Belisarius Call with two things. He asks Call to begin working on a project to make super, super soldiers.
Perfect.
Primaris Marines.
And when did he do this?
Way like before this or during the scouring or like before the Primarchs disappeared.
Yeah, yeah, a couple hundred years after the Horus Heresy.
Yeah, so we're talking thousands of years in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, so like you said, he Reboot Gilliman instructed Call to make these super soldiers, and then also he did the suit of armor.
Yeah.
He wanted that
at
suit
the same
of armor.
Time, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then unfortunately, right, Gilliman, he got knocked out, put into stasis, and none of these things came to happen.
So what happened with the Primaris Marines is Call did not want to come forward and be like, look at all these new super soldiers. Because like
because he
it's a heretical act.
Yeah,
yeah, like it honestly is like a heretical act, what he did.
Yeah, you can't alter something that the Emperor already created perfectly.
Yeah.
But he does
perfectly.
That look, Eric.
Yeah. So he plays a big part. So during the Indomitus Crusade, after Reboot Gilliman's woken up, Call meets them, and they go to Terra together, and they get all these super Astartes, which they're called Primaris Marines, because they're the primary defense against Chaos.
Really?
I don't know. I thought Faith was, but apparently
apparently I was wrong.
Isn't it a simple mind?
Yeah, and they go on the Indomitus Crusade, so they resurrect, or they awaken like thousands and thousands of these Primaris Marines. And it's, I forget what founding it is, like what number, like the 21st founding or whatever. But they end up founding a bunch of Space Marine chapters. And as they go on through the crusade, the galaxy has been ripped in half. So Chaos is flooding out of the Great Rift. So a bunch of the chapters are being like pushed back and stuff. And as Reboot Gilliman and all these Primaris Marines are advancing, they're reinforcing all these other chapters with Primaris Marines as they push into the galaxy and like try to retake it all.
Yeah, so essentially they're reclaiming like lost ground. And it's not just Chaos. I mean, like other alien races see the Imperium on the back foot with everything that's going on. And so suddenly they like jump in and take advantage of a crippled
when you're
Imperium.
Fighting a war on 30 fronts.
Yeah, exactly. They're all going to take their piece too, right?
Yeah.
And even like you have successionists, like human worlds that are like, oh, now's our chance to break away, blah, blah. So Gulliman is trying to re-establish the Imperium, re-establish order, and reinforce like all these Space Marine chapters that have suffered heavy casualties from the fighting or like, yeah.
Yeah. And eventually they succeed. And then Reboot Gilliman can finally go back to Ultramar and fight Mortarion because Mortarion's there messing up Ultramar and the 500 worlds and whatever.
Yeah, he's laying some smackdown on those people.
Yeah, so that's kind of the Imperium, very, very roughly. We got the heretic Belisarius Call, and he does a bunch of heretical technology, makes Primaris Marines, he creates better bolt guns, floating Land Raider Rhino Redeemer things.
Oh my gosh.
Like
the super heavy tanks.
He's fucked.
Atreus or Atriuk or...
I can't read.
I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
But it looks weird.
Yeah, and so there's him, and then there's also Reboot Gilliman, who is now like the functioning figurehead of the Imperium.
Do you have that quote from Reboot?
Yeah, so just for a little bit of setup, I know we've mentioned it before, but the Imperium of 40K is not the Imperium of 30K. Like, we've said that a lot of times, and this really drives that point home.
Yeah.
So Gulliman was wounded and gets put into stasis when the Imperium still looked like a semblance of what the Emperor had envisioned.
Yeah,
it wasn't perfect,
like,
but, you know.
Where they believe in science.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line
prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
And like everything's working properly and yeah.
Yeah. So this quote like really outlines like for him to wake up into this like ultra religious, like fanatical Imperium that's like abandoned all the values that the Great Crusade upheld. It just gives a good insight into his mindset. So I'm just going to read the quote. "What more do you want from me? I gave everything I had to you, to them. Look what they've made of our dream. This bloated, rotting carcass of an empire is driven not by reason and hope, but by fear, hate, and ignorance. Better that we had all burned in the fires of Horus's ambition than live to see this."
That's such a sweet quote.
Yeah.
And it really, yeah, it does sum up like the difference between like
30K and 40K.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it gives like Gulliman is trying to do his best to make the Imperium work, even though it's such a broken shadow of what it used to be.
And there's cool plot points too where like Rabut Gilliman and the Inquisition and the Ecclesiarchy come to like an understanding where like Rabut Gilliman's like, "I do not believe that the Emperor's a god," and like the Ecclesiarchy's like, "Well, he is," and they kind of come to this agreement where it's like, "Well, we got to work together. You guys can kind of do that, but
So humanity is too far at risk at this stage. Like things
are take
way,
that away
yeah,
from
to
them.
Have to risk a civil war and to like to pretty much gut like the faith behind what kind of kept the Imperium together."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of a neat
they're like forced to work together even though they don't really see eye to eye.
Yeah, so the Imperium eventually kind of regains but kind of stabilizes a little bit with Rabut Gilliman emerging.
So what would be the Dark Imperium in all of that?
So it kind of is a reference to the other half. So a lot of like the progress is made on the side of the Imperium, on the southern half where Terra is of the Great Warp Rift. So the Dark Imperium refers to the northern half of the Empire that's cut off, and they can no longer see the light from the Astronomicon.
Yeah, and that's where that name comes from.
Yeah, Dark Imperium.
Yeah.
So there is progress made. Like I know the planet Baal is on the other side, and Gulliman does reach there.
Yeah,
Baal being
the homeworld of the Blood Angels. Yeah, so it has a significant role in like the history of the Imperium and stuff like that. But it's still kind of it's not as stable as the southern Terran side of the Empire. So there's still like the border regions, I guess you could say, of it are still not stabilized. But Gulliman's trying to reestablish, you know, a semblance of an empire.
Yeah. Do they have a name for the southern side?
I've never like, read anything, but it's
the
possible.
Imperium.
Yeah, like it must just be that, but
Do they call it the Dark Imperium?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not just like
In High Gothic it's Imperium Nihilus, which I think is pretty cool. And the Low Gothic would be Dark Imperium, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, I think that's pretty close to summing up humanity.
Yeah, and there's stuff that happens.
Yeah, there's like more detail.
Yeah, but. But that's like where they're at is they have their Imperium and then they have their Dark Imperium, right? They have their one side. They're trying to just get back in balance and they're trying to be like Rabut is learning what it takes to steer the Imperium.
Yeah.
Right? And then you have the Dark Imperium who's just kind of a separate entity is at this point.
And apparently the Dark Imperium's led by...
Gulliman anoints Dante, who's the chapter master of the Blood Angels from Baal.
The one that Christian wants to bang.
Right, yeah, that's right.
I forget what his title is, but he's pretty much like the warden of the dark side of the Imperium.
The dark side.
Which is sweet, because like, it's cool that that's a title for him. Or yeah, like that's a role that is filled by
so
him.
He takes like a greater responsibility than his chapter ever.
Yeah, because like would. I don't know like how much of like the day to day he does, or how much like obviously he's not doing the day to day, but I wonder if he could if he wanted to, which is very different than before the rift happened, because before the rift happened, the High Lords of Terror, they governed everything, right? Planetary Lords governed everything. Where now it's like they're putting like a military rule behind their empire once again, as opposed to a bunch of seats on a council. Yeah. I don't know how true that is, because I don't think
details are a little vague on like how he actually governs, but that's a good angle I didn't even think about, which like a big part of the Horus Heresy was, you know, Space Marines feeling like they were doing all the fighting and then getting pushed out by civilians who didn't know anything about what it took to govern.
But now
govern.
Here, yeah, because like Reboot Gilliman could have appointed anyone on that side of the galaxy, but he chose a Space Marine to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Not even a Primaris Marine. What a joke.
What a jokester. There's a couple of Marines that... we'll get into the Primaris later. that are good enough to be still good. But
yeah, of course. They have their plot armor super thick.
A couple. Super thick plot armor.
Yeah. So let's go to what's kind of happening with Chaos as of this point.
So Chaos, the biggest thing that they get out of this is before they were limited to raiding the galaxy. So all of Chaos fled. Like you have multiple parts of Chaos. You got Chaos Space Marines. You got like traitor humans, and you also got demons. Everyone at the Horus Heresy basically fled into the Eye of Terror or into the Maelstrom, which is in the center of the galaxy. It's another warp rift.
Yeah, it's a smaller like.
Or they set up like their own like little operation. Single world here and there. But by and large,
most of them went into the.
Yeah, so they only had like 2 points where they could assault the Imperium from, and they were always trying to attack Cadia and get a foothold. And sure, there's always like you can jump out of the warp and then jump anywhere you wanted to, but
it's not as reliable.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing about Cadia. What makes Cadia so special? They call it the Cadian Gate, which is a stable warp route in and out of the Eye of Terror. So to control it, it's like controlling a major highway in and out of a real space. Yeah. So that's why Chaos, they're almost like held prisoner in a sense. Like, not quite that, but they're limited from...
Every time they wanted to come out, they had to prepare for a fight.
They have to fight their way out.
Yeah.
If not, take unreliable warp jumps to who knows where and just commit an act of raiding and then quickly jump back. Right? Yeah. So now that they control that, they control a stable route in and out a real space. So that kind of creates a value behind Cadia.
Yeah, and the other thing is now since the Great Rift happened across the entire galaxy, Chaos can come out pretty much anywhere. Like they have such a wide swath of the galaxy that they can come out of now and attack things. The other big thing that Chaos has happening for them is a lot of their Primarchs are coming out more and more now. Where... Before, there was only a couple Primarchs who came out, like Angron of the World Eaters came out a couple times.
Magnus, I think, came out.
Magnus came out, attacking the Space Wolves a couple times. I guess, like, a couple
would have... limited incursions into the Imperium.
But now it seems like they're really doing, like, an all-out push against the Imperium, where multiple ones are coming out. So
it does sound like a lot of that has to do with the fact that Roboot has resurrected, though.
Yeah, it's like...
Like, they want to fight their brother.
Yeah.
And, it is even written in the book there that, like, they take a personal interest in Reboot's resurrection, right?
Right.
So, yeah, like, you know, old grudges or, like, a chance to maybe corrupt somebody new, stuff like that where...
Yeah, or even just to test your mettle again. Because, like...
Yeah, when you're a demon Primarch, there's not a lot in the galaxy that can really challenge you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, a big part of what kept them in the warp is, like... participating in the great game, right? Like fighting other chaos gods and, you know.
Yeah, vying for power that way.
Yeah. So there's as much going on in the warp as outside of it.
Yeah.
For them anyways.
Yeah, so that's a big thing that is being pushed now where we're definitely going to see more and more Chaos Primarchs coming out.
I do want to say an interesting thing too as well is Abaddon's Crusades. Each of them is given a specific purpose where he was like... All those crusades are culminating to this one point.
Yeah.
So he was like picking targets that would like weaken other pylons, or he would like collect artifacts that he needed to launch this massive crusade. So he gets a lot of bad publicity for failing 12 times before this 13th time.
Yeah.
But if you look at it from his perspective, he achieved the objectives he needed to, retreated, and then prepared for his next assault.
Yeah, and I think we also mentioned it too. It's just when he goes back into the warp, for him, only a year could have passed.
Yeah, so to him, he's just like preparing for a counter assault.
Yeah,
like
but then he comes back out and it's like, oh shit, 1,000 years went by. Right. And that's why it took him so long to do it.
Yeah, like to him, the crusade never really ended. Like he's just coming back and forth. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or close enough to nonstop that like it all seems like one long campaign, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of like alleviates some of the bad credit that Abaddon gets.
Yeah. One thing that makes me sad is characters like Abaddon, what's the Khalgar, Marinius Khalgar, these chapter masters are important leaders who were once like the most powerful people in the galaxy or the most influential. Now when the Primarchs come back, so like Marinius Khalgar was a chapter master of the Ultramarines, but then when Reboot Gilliman gets back, it's like
he has to take sidestep.
Yeah and it's like, well, Khalgar,
it was good knowing.
Yeah, like go back to the front line.
It's fun while it lasted.
You know, like same with like Abaddon. Abaddon's still pretty powerful.
Yeah, but I mean, compared to someone like Mortarion or Magnus, right? We'll see. We'll see what.
But like even Mortarion and Magnus, like Abaddon is from the Black Legion, and his guy's dead. Technically, like
Horus is dead. Yeah.
So like the other ones won't ever have as much sway as let's say Reboot Gilliman and.
It's not an equivalent per se.
Yeah, but it still is like
it kind of like shrinks his threat level to the greater galaxy when you have like, oh crap, we have demon primarchs coming out now.
Yeah,
that kind of shifts your focus, right?
Yeah,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, sure. Maximus Adfield Khalgar and his Power Fists of Doom.
To be fair, when Gulliman is resurrected, he actually asks Khalgar for permission to take control of the chapter.
Well, because Khalgar or Reboot Gilliman's all about the rules.
Yeah, exactly. And like that's a way of kind of showing honor to him too.
Yeah.
So he doesn't like, he is the entitled leader of the Ultramarines, right? He could easily just like take control instantly. But he as like following the rules, but as much as showing him respect of like, hey, thanks for your service.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service.
He asks Khalgar permission to take control of the chapter, which obviously Khalgar is not going to deny him, right?
Yeah. Like,
you know, he's just as much, he's just in awe as well as anybody else is of his own Primarch. So,
yeah.
But I found that interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of a neat point. So that's kind of chaos. Like, now they have the ability to siege the Imperium from the entire galaxy, really. Like, anywhere in the center
really
of the galaxy.
Steps up the threat level.
Yeah.
The next thing we're going to talk about is the Eldar race. And I guess a lot of this will, part of this will step forward into the Reboot Gilliman being resurrected arena.
Yeah. So once again, we got to go back in time now to before the Great Rift happened.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Eldrad, who was kind of like more of a radical Eldar in that he was like him.
He's the oldest Eldar that we know about. And he's
oldest craft world non-dark Eldar. Yeah.
Okay, that's
I think Vect is older than him.
That's a valid point. Yeah. But his foresight into the future is also super crazy.
Yeah. So he kind of like he wanted to bring about like the Eldar gods like new creation.
Yeah.
And he wanted to bring it about like now. Like he didn't want to wait.
Yeah. I don't know how much you guys touched on it on the Eldar episode, but the Eldar. They consider themselves a dying race, and their whole thing is trying to resurrect their god of death, Yanid. So, you know, going back to that episode with the Infinity Circuits and like the culmination of their souls, like when they die, to prevent them getting eaten by Slaanesh, they store them in these Infinity Circuits, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he is trying to find a way. So, in Eldar belief, is that they need all Eldar to die, and it's the Jessalt consciousness of all their souls together that will create this new god. Kind of the way they created Slaanesh with their over excesses, they can create their god of death with the death of their whole race. Eldrad is trying really hard to sidestep like the need for them all to die and try to resurrect the god early.
Right. So he goes to this planet called Zmesnes, and he attempts to, through whatever ritual he's trying, but he attempts to awaken Yanid like right there. but he is stopped by the Death Watch.
Yeah.
Which are Space Marines.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Which are a Space Marine chapters.
If people don't know what Death Watch are.
Oh, yeah. He's stopped by an arm of the Inquisition.
Which is then part of the Imperium.
Right. Yeah.
Stop complicating things.
In the hierarchy. Yeah, so he's stopped by them. There's a couple, like, I read a couple different sources on this. One of them says that he actually partially succeeds and that Yanid's spirit is, like, partially drawn into this reality. And then Yanid, like wandered through the galaxy looking for someone, not to possess, but to, like, become his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
And the other ones don't say anything like that at all. But it
others
kind of,
say that, like,
he just failed.
Yeah, and sometimes it even says that, like, it was corrupted.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Yeah, he gave me that look.
Well, I actually, the whole, when Mark and I were actually talking about this, is when he said it was corrupted, and I actually couldn't find anything that said that.
I'm pretty sure he...
Yeah, like, I'm...
Yeah, whatever.
It is what it is.
For all we know, Games Workshop doesn't even know.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
But what happens is he started it, and he failed. And then... I like to think, like, what makes the most sense to me is that his spirit was there, because this is where, like, after this is when it really picks up with Yanid. And Yvrain is found. And Yvrain is a Eldar. Christian, you know way more about her than I do.
Yeah, so she's walked many paths of both the Craft World Eldar and the Dark Eldar, and has even been in... I forget what the path is, but the path of the Wanderer, whatever they call that, like as a ranger or pirate or one that isn't strictly conformed to Craft World's like path system.
Yeah.
But she has also walked those paths. So she's like been around for a long time trying out like all these different aspects of the Eldar race.
Yeah.
And when we encounter her, she's in the pits of Komorok as a pit fighter, as a witch. And this is after her long history that led her there. That's when the spirit of Yanid finds her when she's killed, actually, in the arena. I don't want to say he possesses her, but, like, I guess he uses her as a conduit.
Yeah.
And kind of destroys part of the city of Komorok because... I don't remember. It's been a while since you've done your Eldar episode, but Psykers aren't allowed to use their powers in Komorok, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's in the Webway, and to attract any kind of warp attention in there is a bad thing for them.
Devastating.
Yeah. So by her, again, I don't know what to call it, not necessarily possession, but by her linking up with Yanid's spirit, she in effect, and she was, I believe it's a Farseer, she was as well. So she is like, has strong psychic potential. So through her death and resurrection through Yanid, she opens up a gateway for demons to flood into Komorok. So Komorok is essentially in a constant state of war now, because now they have an opening in their once, you know, semi-safe city, safe from the warp, not safe from each other.
Yeah.
So
they're all going to have to work together?
No. Well, kind of.
Friend hammer.
It is friend hammer. So she makes her escape from there, now touched by Yanid. And I'm a little sketchy on the details. Do you know how like they ultimately awaken Yanid?
It's just a ritual. Like, okay, she's on a craft world and she sacrifices like thousands of Eldar souls in there to awaken like Yanid, but
right, that's it. Beltan, yeah. So they end up on the craft world Beltan, and they end up sacrificing the what do you call the
spirit circuit, the infinity circuit.
Infinity circuit, yeah. So it is a substantial number of Eldar souls, and I mean, there's a whole bit with them like fighting demons on there and such. And I believe that's where they say Yanid is corrupted, because they're fighting some Slaaneshi demons who stick their hands into the infinity circuit.
Oh, okay.
And like right before Yanid is born.
Oh, okay.
And they start like hunting down some of the Eldar souls in the circuit. Hmm. So they say like it's a potential, you know, it's one of those rumors that like could be, maybe, might not.
Oh, okay.
Have infected the birth of Yanid with Slaanesh. And obviously like the reason these demons attack is to prevent the birth of Yanid, because
Slaanesh knows.
Slaanesh is scared of, you know, another chaos, not another Eldar god being awoken to fight specifically what unites all these Eldar together. And this is like she unifies like Eldar Exodite, she unifies Craftworld Eldar, she unifies, yeah, and she unifies Dark Eldar, who all have a vested interest in fighting Slaanesh, right?
Yeah.
They created this god and they want to, you know, that's the ultimate threat.
It's been prophesied about for like thousands. Like,
It's the seventh path. Seventh path is like the birth of Yanid and like the restoration of the Eldar.
So it's not hard to gather all these people because all of them already know the story of Yanid. They already know the prophecy. And like,
it's more just like the time is now. Come join us.
Yeah.
And that isn't to say that all Eldar, not all, hashtag not all, Eldar are under this umbrella, but a good chunk of them are. You have Craftworlders that don't trust Yanid and don't trust
Yvrain.
Yeah. They don't know, you know, like, were they infected by Slaanesh? Is she who she says she is, right? Is this, you know, warp trickery? So they kind of are standoffish. You have, you know, Exodites will always kind of be standoffish. And then you have Dark Eldar, particularly the homunculi. So what Yanid does now, the whole thing with Slaanesh and why the Eldar hate Slaanesh so much is Slaanesh consumes their souls when they die if they're not protected by Spirit Stone or Infinity Circuit. So Yanid absorbs Eldar souls. And so instead of going to Slaanesh now, they can go to her. Or him. Sorry, yeah. To him, her, it. To the god.
Technically, any of the reborn can do it.
Yeah, but essentially it's all feeding back into this Jessald god, right?
So the Inari is like the faction of people who follow Yvrain. And they're like, the Inari can be any from any other faction, like the Exodites, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And what makes them special is any of them can actually absorb souls to feed them to Yanid instead. Yeah.
And by feed, I guess it's less.
It's more of like a conduit.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's like they're protected by, you know, becoming a part of the god versus being consumed by the god, right?
Yes.
Which is what Slaanesh would do.
Yeah. But it actually makes any of the reborn that much more coveted by Slaanesh because all of them are like treasure troves of souls for her.
Yeah.
So they're like, they're trying to like save their race and like birth this god, but at the same time, like they're putting targets above their head because of this.
Yeah, and they kind of have to save themselves. What's up?
So the reborn, are they called that? I don't know if this is true or not. To join the Yanari, do you have to like kill yourself, just like Yvrain got killed and then is reborn?
I have no idea.
That's how they gain these powers.
You don't have to.
The only blurb I ever read just said like the Yanari or the reborn.
Yeah,
like, it didn't offer anything else for me.
So the other epitaph to Yanid is the god of death and rebirth. So if you go back to Eldar mythology, how like. They could die and be reborn. Like they had, they would reincarnate. Back when the warp was stable, and I'm talking like a millennia or more ago,
before Slaanesh.
Yeah, before Slaanesh, before like the Chaos Gods really upended the warp. The warp was so stable that when an Eldar died, their spirit would go into the warp, and then they would be reborn again into a new body.
Oh, like the old school shamans of Earth.
Sure. Yeah. But so this was common practice. So you know they were essentially immortal both in their soul and their body. So this is a kind of a way like Yanid now is a god of death and rebirth. It's coming back to that, you know, they have a chance at a second life without being destroyed by Slaanesh.
Okay.
So yeah, that's kind of the other thing with Yanid is and the rebirth part of it.
Yeah. Not just a god of death.
Yeah. And there are some resurrection powers like she resurrects a prominent Eldar pirate, Prince Ariel.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, he dies, and she has the ability to resurrect people as well.
Yeah.
So it's not like a they have to thing, but it's definitely within her power capabilities for sure.
Hmm. Warp magic.
Yeah. So now, going back to what I was saying with the homunculi, the Dark Eldar. So there's a faction of them as well that don't trust the Yanari, and they are fighting actively against her as well. So while the Eldar generally unified now under this new faction, they're not all, you know, they're still independent.
Well, technically, actually, like anytime like Yvrain shows up somewhere or the Yanari like strike like a banner, like, yes, we have a group of Yanari now. Like it's said that like civil strife follows everywhere. Like it's supposed to be unifying, but it's actually polarizing the race.
That makes
because
sense.
Now you have to pick a side. You either are
you're for them or against them.
Yeah, you're either part of the Yanari and helping to bring forth Yanid, or you're not. And what you're doing is actually opposing this faction. So while it should be a time of like
Friend Hammer,
it's actually much more polarizing for them than it was before.
Yeah, so it's a give and take kind of thing with them, but that's kind of where they're at.
Yeah, so they play a part in resurrecting Reboot Gilliman as well.
Oh yeah, so that again goes back into the death and rebirth aspect of Yanid. So Irvain is present at the resurrection of Gilliman. And again, you have this whole behind closed door scenario with Call, who brings a suit of armor that acts like a life support system. But Irvain says it's not enough to bring him back to life. So essentially what she has to do is she kills him to release his spirit and then recapture his spirit back into his mortal shell.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, the Ultramarines and stuff that are present at the time like think this is crazy. Like, you're not going to kill our Primarch, right? But then there's a chaos assault, kind of distracts everybody. So Call and
they just do it.
Intervene. Yeah.
We'll jump back just a bit just to talk about how the hell you have Eldar working together with the Imperium. Because that's kind of a big thing. Kind of a fucking gay thing.
Kind of a thing.
So the Eldar, they have the ability of foresight and they're always looking 10 steps ahead.
Or at least trying to.
Yeah, it never works out quite as how they want it to. But the Eldar see that even with the Yanari and the Unitedness, they're still not powerful enough to be able to take on Chaos, to be able to take on the galaxy. So they're kind of using the Imperium as a pawn, which is they've done that many times or whatever.
If they make this enemy strong, Chaos will focus on them and leave us be.
Yeah, and they'll wipe each other out, then we can figure out from there. But that's kind of how they get into...
Yeah,
they end up rescuing like Call and a couple other prominent figures from the fall of Cadia. When Cadia is about to get destroyed, the Yanari with Yvrain open a webway portal and take a bunch of survivors.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how she gains their trust, or at least Call's trust.
There's some again going to the whole warp thing, like. Tigerius, who's the librarian of the Ultramarines, also says he's been having visions and things, which kind of like lends credence to like what Irvine is saying when she meets them.
Yeah.
So, and there is still that element of distrust, right? Like the Ultramarines don't, you know, welcome to our home planet. Let's show you to
come into our most holy of places. Yeah. Like,
there's definitely like an aura of like distrust and like, you know, and especially with, and they don't outright say they need to kill Gulliman. That's kind of like a, they say it right when they're there.
Yeah.
Just, you know, because they never would have even got that far if that's what they announced they that their intent was to do. So, yeah, they kind of get some prominent Imperial figures behind them when they rescue them from Cadia. And, you know, the Eldar have their own objectives. They're going to use humanity to fight Chaos because they don't have the capabilities of doing it just yet themselves, right? Yeah. So, you know, make a buffer.
Yeah. So they resurrect Call and then the...
Gilliman.
Gilliman. Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.